What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station this Wednesday on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
After every single Commanders game, generally they're playing Sundays and we'll do this on Mondays. But the day after, when we're back in after a Commanders game, we do game balls and gassers. These are our ways to highlight the best and the worst performances, decisions, moments of games. Specifically, though, we really try to isolate and highlight players that played poorly or played really, really well. And so with that in mind, it is time for our first installment this preseason of Game Balls and Gassers. I want to give a game ball to Jakori Kroski-Merritt. He had a play as a receiver that really impressed me, where he comes out of the backfield, he leaves a linebacker in his wake, he makes a catch, he makes a guy miss, was shifty, 8-yard completion, gets out of bounds. I actually posted a video of it if you want to go look at it, at Grant H. Paulson on Instagram. His rushing totals, nothing impressive, but he had two really good runs where he showed off jump cuts, including a 9-yard run that was blocked for about 2 or 3. He ended up 7 for 24. He has been the talk of camp. Everybody's been very impressed with Bill Merritt. The question has been, is he going to play well enough in preseason games when they're actually tackling and when now being a running back gets harder to the point where he's going to climb the depth chart? I saw enough from him in that one game. I'd like to see him get some reps with the first team in the Cincinnati matchup. And I know Robinson and Eckler are probably going to play, and they can play. I know what both of those guys are, yep. And that's fine. Get him out there for a few reps and let him break a sweat and let him get into football shape. But I'd like to see Merritt during the quarter or whatever you're going to play the starters get some work with starters against starters to see what that looks like. Because he does have an explosiveness and a cutting ability in the backfield that Robinson does not have on first and second down. So, game ball to him.
Josh Connolly. There's mixed bag, I think, overall, but the reason they were so intrigued, it seems, with a guy his size, is how athletic he is, and they're going to get him in space an awful lot. There was one innocuous kind of a play that I've seen broken down a couple different times. The pass went in an opposite direction. So the defensive end, or whoever was rushing there from New England, is probably 4 yards to Connerly's right. There's a tight end in between them. Connerly slides over and meets the guy when he gets basically one step towards the backfield, and he was not even a factor on the play. It was really simple, clean, athletic. It's not something that's going to go into send it to Canton for a first, sign of his future Hall of Fame career or something unbelievably special. But you go, that looked big time. That looked like a right tackle that can really play in this league, right? Using that athleticism. So you can dream on some of those screens, getting to the second level and doing some of those things. Again, there's plenty to work on. Not saying he's a finished product just yet, but I thought that was really encouraging. Seeing that athleticism kind of play, not just in practice or whatever, not just in theory, but in a game like that, I thought it was encouraging.
I think the arrow is also just trending up massively for him in terms of his stock. If you go back to the opening couple of practices to right now, I'm not sure there are many players on the team that have improved more or look more like they belong that didn't necessarily right away.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he has made major strides. There's no doubt in my mind. I'm going to go Johnny Newton, one of the few guys that played on defense who is going to play a lot this season if the A plan comes to fruition. Johnny Newton made two plays in the backfield. He was involved in the turnover where Drake May fumbled. Johnny Newton was right there on that sack, and then he also blew a play up otherwise in the backfield for a TFL that somebody else got. But twice he was noticeable. That was the guy I was expecting out of Illinois, and he was doing it against starters, for the record, even though Washington's starters weren't out there. New England's were. But I think he could be a pocket pusher. I think he could be a guy that gets up the field. With their lack of proven depth on the outside from an edge-rushing standpoint, they're going to need to get creative. And that means, I think, freeing up Daron Payne to rush the quarterback, getting Johnny Newton unleashed, getting him moving upfield. And that's going to be part of the creativity. I think the design is going to be guys like Payne and Newton and even Kinlaw on the inside are going to have to help generate some of the pass rush you might not get from the outside when you're stuffing the run with Dietrich Wise or Cleveland Farrell. But Newton, to me, was the loudest performer in their front seven by far, in the early going on Friday night.
Kick coverage. Oh, no. So overall, Washington in this game actually outgained the Patriots in terms of return kicks because they had 9 of them for 204 yards total. On 3 kick returns, the Patriots managed 187 yards. Touchdown, Travion Henderson. 62 yards, Antonio Gibson, our old friend. Dan Quinn was pissed about that, kind of rightfully so. Again, great teachable tape. Glad it happened now as opposed to during the regular season. But that was not a good look.
Sam Hartman. I thought Sam Hartman sprayed the ball all over the place, like a hose with its thumb on the front where you just start splattering water everywhere. He was very inaccurate. And if this is a competition for the third job, which I think is what's happening, because Daniels is going to start and Mariota's the backup, it's not even just about this game. I mean, Josh Johnson, for the short term, is the obvious better quarterback. If you needed someone to play in September, October, probably November, December, Josh Johnson should be that guy. He came in, went 15 of 22, 173, touchdown and a pick. You know, and the interception wasn't even necessarily all his fault or as bad a play as the Sam Hartman interception was. Hartman went 9 of 19. And even a couple of the completions, one behind Ben Sinnott that he caught, like it could have easily been a 7 of 19 performance based on throws out of his hand. I thought he was bad. I thought Johnson was pretty decent. But even being out at practice, watching them throw side by side, like Johnson does everything that Hartman does a little bit better. He's just a ton older. The question is, what are they looking for? Do they want a third-string quarterback who's not actually going to play this year, who's just going to be in the room helping Jaden Daniels get ready for games as his buddy, who you can develop long-term into being either more of a 3 or maybe a 2? Because that could be Hartman. If they actually want someone who could play, like last year when they kept Driscoll as their third quarterback, then you need to keep Hartman on your practice squad as your fourth guy in the org, and Johnson stays as the 3. But there's really no way to convince me in any capacity, Danny, that Sam Hartman is a better quarterbacking option for this year than Josh Johnson. And this game cemented that for me in a lot of ways.
Trey Amos. Not a ton of work. Oh, but I just like it. I can't help it. I have an obsession. I'm terrible in general at a lot of things, and everybody knows it. But if you've got size and you can move around, I just fall in love. And Amos isn't that big, but he looks big. I don't know how to say it better than that. He just looks like a Legion of Boom-style cornerback. He looks like a Dan Quinn member of the secondary. The stats don't jump out at you. I think it was 2 tackles and sort of that was it. But you just, if you end up sort of watching him, there's a fluidity to it. There's an explosiveness to it. He looks in control, and he looks like he belongs in the NFL. Not just belongs, but looks like he can be a guy that is going to start at a pretty solid base and grow into something special as he kind of experiences the league and sees some different things. Physical, fast, strong, all of it.
He was targeted in the, you know, kind of high red. I don't know if it was I'd have to go back and look, fade or deep corner or whatever it was, but that throw into the end zone, he was step for step, yep. Good coverage, had a tackle in the running game coming downhill as well shortly thereafter. Very limited, as you said, in his playing time, but was noticeable a couple of times in very positive ways. Let me go rapid fire here a couple of game balls. Noah Igbinoghene, who's now been moved down the depth chart, I thought very good coverage, couple of times where he was in tight and broke up a pass or was right there as a play didn't get made. Very encouraging. I think he's got a chance to make the squad. Ja'Cory Brooks at wide receiver, undrafted free agent out of Louisville. He was the talk of camp for a day or two to start. Then it was very, very quiet. He's had a couple of drops that I've seen even against air that have bothered me, and I kind of cooled on him. But in the game, 5 targets, 5 catches, 59 yards, long of 16. I know it was very late against guys that may not be in the NFL soon enough, but he showed very nicely. And I have more interest in a guy like that who's an undrafted free agent than I do in a K.J. Osborne or a Michael Gallup or one of these retreads. And then lastly, I would say he's not going to make the team probably, but Demetric Felton, who was in the NFL way back in 2022, and when you get a chance in these games, what are you going to do? He had a 28-yard carry he ripped off, led the team with 42 yards. You could tell he might have a chance to be their statistical leader just based on the work he's going to get. But I noticed that was not Ja'Cory Krosky Merritt. You know, a lot of times your 7th-round running back is the guy getting all those carries at the end of the game. They got Bill in and out. I think that tells you a lot about what they're thinking about Merritt.
I wanted to bring that up. That was informative to me. Because, again, he didn't get the full veteran treatment, Robinson Ekeler, nor should he at this point.
7th-rounder, you got to go play.
But it basically shows you This gentleman is in the mix for more, right? You got in, you got off your feet, then it was a lot of guys that we haven't heard of.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station this Wednesday on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
I thought this team scrimmage thing today was awesome. I've got to say, they really leaned into it in the sense of the players got super into it. They had prep yesterday. As yeah, if
it's like
were,
a college spring game. Totally. Man, it's awesome.
Like they were playing a game. They kind of went through the motions yesterday. One of the things I really, really liked today being at Quinn's presser was they let some of their young assistants be the play callers, and then the de facto head coaches were the coordinators. So Joe Witt was deciding fourth down, punt, go for it, that kind of thing. On the other sideline, Cliff Kingsbury was doing that. But the two coordinators on each side of the field were Tavita Pritcher calling plays for the one team, who's the quarterback's coach, and Brian Johnson, who's pass game coordinator, who's been an OC and a play caller in the NFL with the Eagles. And he was doing it for the team that actually won and the only team that scored touchdowns, which was the second string offense. I should point out, by the way, that Brian Johnson was kind of in his bag a little bit as a play caller. I got a little bit steamed up. They ran like a high red zone hook and ladder at one point, like straight out of Ben Johnson's playbook. There was just a couple little things where they went like speed option on the goal line. He was definitely dialing some stuff up and having some fun. But on the defensive side of the ball, the play calling was done again by, it was like Tom Donatell, who was one of their DB assistants, and Jason Simmons, who's the DB's coach. And they were getting to act as coordinators, so to speak. Mm-hmm. I think that type of coaching development is awesome. That's the kind of stuff I love within an organization when we talk about all the time. Cliff may leave and he may take one guy with him. You constantly need to be readying those assistants for coordinating jobs if you're going to be, you know, first division championship level program. And days like today are actually how you do that. We've seen guys like Sean McVay say, I'm taking this preseason game off and I'm going to let Thomas Brown or whoever his assistant is that day, you know, be the head coach of the team in the third preseason game. I would do stuff like that if I'm Dan Quinn. But today was an element of that, which I actually really enjoyed. But they had a coin toss where they send out Josh Johnson and Jaden Daniels, and players are all hopping around right before the kickoff with music blaring. They didn't do kickoffs. They did do punts, although nobody really ever punted. They went for every fourth down just about. But it just felt like the closest thing you can simulate in-house with only your players to a game, you called it right, the college version of the spring game. And quick disclaimer, this is not important and no one should take big takeaways out of this in the grand scheme of what players are going to become. The first team offense got their butts kicked by the first team defense, like dominated. This was the worst I've seen their first team offense look this camp by far. And again, people will get upset or be bothered by this. You shouldn't. It's one practice and it happens. Jaden Daniels was by far the least accurate and the best that I've seen, you know, probably the worst I've seen him at any point over the last couple of years. I don't even know how much of it had to do with him, though. Pass rush got home constantly. The O-line got worked by the D-line. Mm. And receivers weren't getting open. Almost all the completions, he probably completed sub 50% in the 11-on-11 good-on-good stuff. It was all at the line of scrimmage, behind the line of scrimmage, 5 yards or closer, like check down, crossers and stuff. But nothing down the field almost the entire time. Sanders still with pass breakups. Will Harris with pass breakups. Like, I haven't seen that lopsided a butt kicking for a side of the ball in a while.
What should we make of it? Like, because I'm with you. It's not time to pass any kind of judgment, but it's also a data point. Like, it means something
day,
to me.
Yeah. Honestly, like, is it that? That's what I take. It was like, I mean, now, but the problem was it was not just a normal 11-on-11 in a normal practice. Like, the winners get these t-shirts, sounds dumb, but like, they cared about this and they're dancing around and like, there's trash talk and guys are in each other's faces. Yeah. Like, they cared about this. Mm-hmm. And then the defense went out and quite literally dominated the offense. Dominated.
So the good side is the side of the ball that was terrible last year might actually be improved. There might be something here. I'm not talking about a top five group, and I think that would be ridiculous. But an improvement of like 9 or 10 spots would go a long way for this team being in some games and not getting bailed out by, you know, Jaden Daniels having to be Superman. You know, like, so maybe that's the positive part of it. But I don't know. I mean, at a certain point, you'd like to be able to hit the ground running, and a game-like atmosphere like that, not going particularly well. Again, glad it's happening now and not in October or November, but just it's something to keep in the back of your mind if they sputter and don't look particularly good 6 days from now against Cincy.
Sure. And now you've got this preseason game where it didn't go great with their, you know, I'll stop short of saying they're starting off.
Their twos and threes and sevens.
But the receivers that were out there that everybody has no issue dropping a pass because they won't be on the team, that's what I heard a lot of on social media. Those are the guys that are running with the first team, plenty. Now, Terry McLaurin is not on the team right now. He doesn't count at this moment. Until he shows up, he's not on this roster. And because of that, you then go to the next spot down, and Noah Brown is currently hurt. He was standing there talking to Adam Peters at one point. He's not available. Someone could say, well, Noah Brown will be back soon. It's not a big deal. Noah Brown's always hurt. Noah Brown was hurt in Houston. Noah Brown was hurt last year. And I don't want to make light of that. He had like a lacerated kidney and a serious thing.
It was serious, yeah.
But he had multiple injuries he dealt with, beginning of last year, end of last year. He got hurt in, remember, minicamp. He got hurt again now in training camp. Like, this has been an ongoing, reoccurring thing. Are you sure that Noah Brown's not going to be hurt at some point this season? When you tell me it's not a big deal that Chris Moore drops passes because he's not going to make the team, or KJ Osborne drops passes because he's not going to make the team, or who cares what, you know, that receiver looks like, those are the guys running with the first team at practice right now. Like that is what's happening. It's a lot of Luke McCaffrey. It's a lot of, today, KJ Osborne. So eventually, are they going to be in a better spot, or are they going to sign someone that gets cut? Very possibly. But I'm not willing to just say, oh, who cares what those receivers are doing? If you're getting first team reps, there's a chance you might be a part of this thing early in September.
Yep.
Until you're not getting first team reps anymore. But yeah, good defense, I would say, on a lot of stuff. Like Mike Sanristel was fantastic. I mentioned Harris already. I thought he had a really, really good scrimmage. There were other guys that stood out. But there was also just some bad offense. A couple of pre-snap penalties where they go first and 15 on a first and 10. Pass rush, as I said, getting home where it just wasn't clean in terms of protecting Daniels, who was just less accurate than he normally is, probably because things around him were not ideal. But yeah, file it away or don't. To me, bad day for the offense. But it was just, it was a level up of in terms of intensity and excitement, and the players were super into
it. It's a great idea.
And then the offense, I mean, they couldn't get first downs. Like, they didn't get to midfield. They didn't, forget scoring. They finally got to continue a drive after a fourth down incompletion that got, like, overturned on a, they pretended like there was a review or whatever on a bang-bang play to Osborne in the middle of the field. And then, like, kept them on the field, and then a couple plays later, they were back off the field. It was, like, one of those things where they're just like, well, let's keep these guys on the field somehow. We'll just say he caught it.
Yeah. You know?
Like, that's the kind of day it was.
That's not great, Bob. Yeah, no. So it's one of those things where if, you know, they hit the ground running in the regular season or next week against Cincinnati, I'll have forgotten all about it. But if it doesn't happen, if they don't play well or the offense doesn't look good early on, we'll go, hey, wait a minute. You know, was there a trend emerging that we didn't really realize that they maybe weren't really ready to go?
What's on your mind right now? A song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's a brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station this Wednesday on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Nationals All-Star pitcher Mackenzie Gore is with us right now, and he will be with us every Wednesday when he's not starting. When he's starting on a Wednesday, we'll have to move the interview around. But weekly for the remainder of the season, we're fired up about this. We have known and gotten to know Mackenzie well over the last few seasons. He's always enjoyable to catch up with and very candid and has great insights. So, Mackenzie, first of all, thank you for jumping on right after the game from the clubhouse in Kansas City. We appreciate it.
Yeah, appreciate you having me.
Absolutely, man. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, dude.
We're excited to do this for the remainder of the season. What a win for you guys. It was one of those where you get off to the 5-0 start early and then have to play keep away, and then it took the dramatic big hit from Dalen Lyle. What's it like in the clubhouse after a getaway day win like this where you guys battle to the final minute?
Yeah, it's great. You know, getaway day wins are they're always the best. But, you know, it was a gutsy win. Like you said, big hit in the by Dalen, and just a really good way to kind of end the road trip and get some momentum going into a series this weekend.
Is travel, I mean, you guys are such pros, you go through the ups and downs, and you know, we as fans experience everything, but you guys are again, part of the reason why you make it to the major leagues is your makeup, where you know, it's water off a duck's back when things are bad, and you know, you're even keel when it's good. Is it really more fun to travel after a win like this?
Yeah, I think so. For sure. Winning is a lot more fun than losing, so 100%.
When you get on the plane on a day like today, like, I'm sure there's clicks and everyone kind of does their own thing, but is it cards or music or people just kind of locked into their iPads? Like, what's going on for those of us that have never been on one of those team charter flights? What's that like?
No, we got a good group here. So there's, you know, there's a lot of, it could be cards, there's always music being played, but we're always kind of chatting and hanging out. So we got a good group. And so the flights are always fun, and kind of whatever had happened in that game before is over with once you get on the airplane. And, but yeah, flights are great. It's, you know, it's one of the things you look forward to when a season starts, is you get to kind of hang out on flights again. So,
McKenzie, how are you feeling just at this stage? Again, it's, I think we underrate it sometimes. It's such a grind what you guys go through. You're showing up in February and getting ready for this long season. It feels like you've been probably doing it on this treadmill for, you know, 100 years as you get into the dog days of July and August and, you know, almost to September. Just how's the body feeling? How's everything feeling stuff-wise?
Yeah, I feel good. Once you get this point of the year, you know, it's kind of all about how you feel. And everybody, obviously, you don't feel as good in August as you did at the beginning of the year, but that's kind of everybody. And but I feel great. And, you know, I've been taking the ball every 5 days. So, you know, credit to people around me for that. And then, you know, but yeah, the body's awesome. Feels great. And I'm ready to go again Friday.
Nats All-Star lefty McKenzie Gore will be on the bump against the Phillies on Friday at home at Nationals Park, and he has pitched 24 times as a durable, you know, reliable arm. As he said, taking the ball every single time out, coming off one of his more dominant starts of the season, he got back on the good foot. 3 hits, scoreless, 10 strikeouts in San Francisco, 6 innings, walked just 1. What went so right for you in that start? And I got to tell you, I loved your comments after the A's game, not just about yourself, but the team in general and kind of the way things were trending as a pitching staff. It was a moment where you really showed up as a leader and said, hey, this isn't good enough. We got to get this right. And then lo and behold, you go out there and you walk the walk. What did you think kind of going into that game about the importance of it, and how did it feel coming out of it?
Well, you know, one, once you know, I was in that little stretch where you're not playing well, you go in, try to make adjustments to kind of just get back to where you need to be. And yeah, you know, like I said, I meant what I said. That was a tough 4 or 5 days for us. You know, and unfortunately in this game, you're going to have a tough week or so, or a couple weeks, no matter who you are. And, but you got to understand that it doesn't take a whole lot to get back where you need to be. And that's kind of what we had to do. And, but you know, San Fran is over. So now we're getting ready for Philly, a really good team. But yeah, it was just, we had to get back to doing what we're supposed to do. And we did a nice job of that.
I'm curious, did you hear, McKenzie, from anybody like players or people in the org that liked the comments and kind of said, hey, I'm glad you did that? Because sometimes it takes a leader or someone stepping up and saying something along the lines of what you did, which is like, this is not acceptable. We're big leaguers. And there aren't that many veterans left in the clubhouse, really, in terms of like guys 30 plus who have won championships or anything. Did that come up at all? Or did you just feel like someone had to do it? Or was it just naturally what happened?
Yeah, I think it's just natural. I think there's a lot of guys with opportunity here. A lot of guys first time in the big leagues. But yeah, it's just kind of, we all felt it. We still have some guys that have been around for a bit, and we understood that wasn't, you know, no matter what your record is, there's a right way to play the game and a wrong way, and that just wasn't what we should have been doing. And we played much better on this road trip, so credit to those guys, and they've got some opportunity, and they're playing, you know, they're giving it all they got, and so it's been fun to watch those guys.
Yeah, McKenzie Gore with us here on Grant and Danny. You mentioned Philadelphia having a great season, one of the best records in the National League, first place in the East. Is there a little bit extra for a game like that where you can play spoiler and kind of let your competitive juices go as you are such a huge competitor?
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, they're really good. It's Philly. We play them a lot. And you better be ready to go or they'll beat you. And they'll, you know, you can get ugly quick with them. And so you just got to come in ready to go prepared. And there's always a good crowd when we play them. So it'll be a lot of fun. And yeah, they're a really good team, and you get opportunity to play against the best. So
McKenzie's thrown against them, the front runners in the division, twice this year. Two quality starts, including opening day. Six innings,
unbelievable.
One hit, 13 strikeouts. Maybe the best start of your career. Going back real quick, you mentioned the rut before. I have not gotten a chance to talk to you about this. Was there any possibility, do you think, in that A's game that you were tipping anything? Was that something you guys looked into? When someone like you, as dominant as you are, has an outing like that, it's always the first thing I think about, and maybe it's just a lazy take, but did you look into that or try to figure that out, or did you just move on?
Well, you have to look at it, especially when, you know, it's 3 out of 4. We were getting on some runs, and, you know, we hadn't been doing that all year. And yeah, you know, there's a lot of balls over the heart of the plate, and there was no swing and miss. So that's always a box you have to check when you give up runs. We didn't find anything, and there wasn't a crazy adjustment we needed to make other than, you know, a few things mechanically and, you know, try not to throw the ball down the middle as much. But that's always a box you have to check. But that's even when you pitch well, you got to look at that because teams are so good at finding it second or anything now that it's something you got to stay on top of every start.
I was going to say, I just think that's something a lot of times fans don't talk about or think about, rather, is maybe the better way to put it. But it's, I remember talking to a hitter in the big leagues earlier this year about this. And they're like, it's all we do. Like, all we're doing is trying to find a little bit of a tell. And sometimes it's something none of us would notice that a team might pick up on. So it just feels like a bigger part of the game maybe than we acknowledge.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, and teams that are good at it, that's awesome. You know, they're super prepared going in for whatever they're trying to do. And, you know, you got to respect teams that are really prepared, and that's just part of the preparation these days is teams have gotten so good at it. And then on the other side, you got to be able to not do that. So,
McKenzie, we mentioned this at the top. We're pumped to have you on every week. And as a regular guest, you are entitled to pick your walk-up song. So when you join us every Wednesday, unless you're pitching, in which case we'll figure it out. Do you have a song in mind, something that you'd want to hear when it's McKenzie Gore time?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty bad at picking songs and stuff like this. But, I mean, I have a walkout I've had for 4 years now, so I guess we could just use that. Crooked Smile by J. Cole is what it is, but I also, if there's something else y'all want to do, that's fine with me, too. So.
All right, very Love good. It. Well, we will roll with that for now, and if something comes up, maybe we can ask our audience as well. We'll get some of the listeners who are Nats fans to chime in, but I like it. We're fired up, man. It's going to be cool to have you on the show the rest of the way. Thanks for agreeing to do it.
And appreciate you, buddy.
Can't wait till chatting next week.
Yep, I appreciate it. I'll talk to you then.
Have a good trip, man.
Travels. There's McKenzie Gore of the Nationals with us on Grant and Danny here on The Fan.
I'm Toby Altizer with breaking Nationals news. Dylan Cruz has been returned from his rehab assignment and the 60-day injured list to make room. We're all wondering if they'd move an outfielder back to the minors instead. They have DFA'd first baseman Nathaniel Lowe. Dylan Cruz back with the big league club. Nathaniel Lowe, the second leading player with RBIs with 68 on the season for the Nationals, has been DFA'd. I'm Toby Altizer with breaking Nationals news on The Fan.
So that's pretty significant.
I did not see that coming.
And breaking right now over at Nationals Park, just down the street here in the Navy Yard. Here's why this is interesting. So Dylan Cruz is coming back from the IL. As Toby said, needed a spot on the 26-man roster.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like the only obvious play would be to send an outfielder down. But the outfield is their strength right now, where Jacob Young is their premium defensive center fielder. And then they've got more young players they want on the field than spots. James Wood's going to play left every single night. You've got Lyle Hassel and Dylan Cruz and Jacob Young, those four guys for two spots. I think Young is the least important long-term of them, and certainly the guy that needs to play the rest of the way the least just to see what he is. So Cruz is the next most important that you play every single day, probably in center. And then you're debating between like Lyle and Hassel and right. Robert Hassel, Dalen Lyle, one of them separates themselves. Maybe the other becomes a trade chip this offseason, something like that. But I thought someone was getting sent down. I assumed it'd be Jacob Young. They decided to keep all the outfielders up. So good luck to Miguel Cairo navigating that and making sure everybody gets their at-bats. But one of the big concerns or thoughts I had was my plan is to just rotate the DH spot with all your outfielders. So Jacob Young becomes a bench player who comes off the bench late innings or whatever, and you could essentially rotate the outfielders into the DH role so that a couple days a week, James Wood DHs, Dylan Cruz DHs, Robert Hassel DHs, Dalen Lyle DHs, And everyone will say, well, what about Josh Bell? My point was you play him a couple times at first, spell Nathaniel Lowe, who hasn't had a good year. And otherwise, Josh Bell can sit and watch. I don't really care. They cleared it up. They said Nathaniel Lowe's out. This is a guy that they took on $10.5 million for this year. They're going to eat several million still remaining on that deal the rest of the way. And they have just removed him from the organization. It became pretty obvious they were going to non-tender him as the year went on. And I think knowing that, they just decided to act now and said, "What is the point of this?" Rizzo was the one that I think was very high on trading for him, from what I gathered, and I loved the trade when they made it.
It made sense to me, yeah.
I still think that trade was fine. He gave up a reliever, albeit one that could have helped you a little bit, for a guy that played every day, is number two on your team in RBI, and would have hit like 24 home runs. Not the end of the world, but he was not a particularly productive player, and as far as WAR, he was one of the worst Nationals in any season that we've seen. That said, to give up a reliever to get an everyday player who didn't really miss a game at first base, I don't have a problem with.
Mm-hmm.
But the R&D guys, the analytics guys that are now running this thing, Mike DiBartolo and company, were not nearly as high on Lowe when they brought him in. And I've just heard a bunch of stuff about, in the clubhouse, this has not gone the way they wanted. I think they wanted a veteran presence, former World Series champion, guy that would be a really positive influence. And I don't get the sense that that was the case. I think there were some gripes organizationally about, you know, him becoming one of the few veterans on this losing team and his mindset and mentality and the ripple effects he was sending. So I don't think this was like, he's having a tough year, but at least he's this unbelievable influence. I don't think they loved what they were getting out of him off the field in the clubhouse. Not to say he's a cancer or anything. I just don't think
he was not the right vibe or mix.
It was a good mix, and they liked what he was bringing. And then you add in the fact that he was horrendous defensively, took a huge step back, struck out way more than he ever has before, walked way less, just had a really, really bad season.
Yeah, wasn't going particularly well. Probably in worse shape than he's been over the last couple of years, too. I think that's probably part of it, is they're trying to set an example. Again, it feels like we're kicking the guy when he's down. Was great to us in spring training. It was a lot of fun to catch up with him and talk to.
He was an awesome interview. It would have been a guy that would have been great to have on the show regularly throughout the season. Like, he is very, very good. One of my favorite interviews, frankly, with any National that we've done was Nathaniel Lowe in spring training. But just passing along what I've heard.
No, absolutely. No.
It did not go well in the clubhouse as the year went on, and he was a part of a terrible team. He came over from a World Series club in Texas that has been very competitive the last couple of years. It's not that easy when you're 30 years old looking around and everybody's 22 and the team loses every single day. But you know, the other big problem is just his play was nowhere near defensively what it has been in his career. And at the plate, he was kind of a shell of what he's been as well.
Yeah, so if those things, you know, had been maybe up to his career norms or more in line with what they thought they were getting, I don't know that this move gets made today, but when you combine all those factors, now I guess it kind of makes sense, right? Because the thing that you can't do is take at bats away from Wood, Cruz, Hassel, and then by extension, Lyle, and maybe some others. So you kind of solved the problem there. I mean, I wonder if it means one of those guys gets kind of a half day off at first base here and there. Or Josh Bell plays first base every day. I don't know exactly. Paul DeJong will get some chances over there.
So this is my hope. My hope is that Bell becomes their first baseman, because you could say, well, he's not a good first baseman. That would be terrible defensively.
And I would say you're right.
True. And also, Lowe was also really bad defensively, which is odd because he's a former Gold Glover. But if you look at the metrics, you're talking about one of the worst defensive first basemen in the league this year. So put Bell there. Who cares? You already have the worst infield defense in the league. You're playing out the strength.
What are you going to do, lose?
Your second baseman is terrible defensively. Your shortstop is below average defensively. The only guy that plays at a high level defensively in the infield is Brady House at third. So I have no problem, to me, biting the bullet a little bit on first base defense with Josh Bell to free up DH at bats so that twice a week Wood, twice a week, let's say, Cruz, or once a
week. Especially coming back from an injury.
Exactly. Yeah. Now I just found four games where Lyle can play, because he spells Wood twice, he spells Cruz once, he spells Hassel once, and I'm able to rotate this thing with the guys that matter the most. Those guys need at-bats. Like, if you're Mike DiBartolo, you got to go to Miguel Cairo right now and say, hey, remember when you sat Brady House two straight games on the road trip? Don't do that again.
Yeah, respectfully, never do that again.
Hey, remember when you didn't play Robert Hassel three straight games? That's inexcusable, man. If you want to keep managing for the rest of the year, I want you to. You got to play that guy. This is the gig. Do you want it or you don't? I don't care if your wants and my wants align. This is what matters for this organization long term. Let's go to the hotline. Welcome onto the show, the ESPN NFL draft analyst and insider, We always love having on from the Four Letter Network. Matt Miller is with us, and we wanted to talk not only about the Commanders draft class, but some of the rookies who stood out in week one of the preseason. Matt, it's awesome to have you back on. How are you?
Doing well. Good to be talking to you guys in August and not in March and April. This is fun.
Ain't that the truth?
That's right.
So let's just start with Shedeur Sanders is showing for the Cleveland Browns. As has been the case with the discourse around him since he was drafted, like nothing can just happen normally, right? Everyone's got to have the hottest, most scolding take. What did you think of how he looked, and how significant is that in the overall eval, as he right now is still fourth on that depth chart?
I mean, he looked good. There's no way around it. I think that's, you want to look at every rookie and say, okay, how did they handle the pressure? How did they handle the speed of the game? What was asked of them? What situations were they put in? And you want, you know, every positive takeaway is a good one, I think. You know, I thought he handled the pacing of the game really well. He was accurate. Obviously, you know, the two touchdowns he made plays. I think there were also times where you saw, like, with some of the bailing of the pocket and some of the things where he was running around making plays. I don't know that that works in the regular season like it does the preseason so much. So it's like, I was still a little bit skeptical of some of the things he was doing. And I'm someone that, like, I was a fan of his, you know, I had a second round grade on him. I thought there was a shot he was going to be drafted in the top 15. So I think the key now is, does he get more reps with, you know, second team? Does he eventually get some reps with starters? Because that quarterback room is very unbalanced right now. And I think we're all waiting to see what's going to happen. So he definitely didn't hurt himself in any way.
Would you make a Jackson Dart?
I thought he also looked really good. And similarly, like, Jackson just looks like he belonged. You know, the pacing was great. Never looked, you know, super rushed or pressured. And I think with each guy, I look back at, like, okay, where were we pre-draft? The pre-draft with Jackson was, hey, the ability's all there, but the scheme he played in, and some of this for Shedeur as well, but with Jackson especially, like, the scheme he played in college, it was so much, it's like, hey, if the vertical shot's not there, check down's not there, run. So seeing him get through some of the progression, seeing him be accurate and on time, I think that's what you're really, really looking for.
What's a reasonable timeline for both of those guys to get on the field this season?
Well, I think in New York, it's different because Russ is there and Jameis is there, and those guys are established veterans. And so it's different. And also, Dable needs to win. And so it's like, okay, I don't think Dart's going to get on the field. I don't know if he's going to play this year if they're competitive. And that's okay. You know, he's barely 22 years old. He's coming out of that Lane Kiffin offense. So it's like you want him to have time to learn and acclimate. I think we've all learned lessons from, you know, whether it be Geno Smith, Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, whoever it might be, we've learned lessons about, you know, let's not rush guys onto the field, especially if they didn't play a ton in college. And so with Jackson, it's like, I don't feel the pressure. With Shedeur, what do you have to lose? You're not going to win the division. You know, you're not better than the Bengals, Ravens, or Steelers in any universe. So, like, why not? If he's showing up and being accountable, if he knows the offense, if his teammates, you know, are respecting what he's doing, what do you have to lose by putting him out there? Because if you hit on a fifth round pick, the financials, you're so above the curve on the financials. Like, you should be begging that he does hit. Like, that's what you want to happen in Cleveland, is that he hits. Not only because it's a good story, and I want my guy Mel Kiper to be right, but also it's like, from a financial standpoint, that's the way to win in the NFL right now.
Matt Miller with us here on Grant and Danny. Give him a follow at NFL Draft Scout. Pick 1-1. It's just so strange that there's zero attention or hype with a quarterback that goes 1-1. Nobody really seems to care all that bad about Cam Ward, but, you know, not much of a showing. We only saw, I think, 8 or 9 pass attempts in his first preseason action, but what'd you make of it?
I mean, again, I don't ever want to overstate what a guy does in the preseason, but it was encouraging. And Cam has the least talent around him of any of these quarterbacks we're talking about. And that's just the reality of that team right now. You know, they are very much rebuilding, and, you know, they've got Calvin Ridley, but they don't have a lot else. Their offensive line, you know, it's like, they're young. We need to see some jumps from some guys there as they move around, especially. But yeah, I thought he looked good, and I like Cam, but I will say this. I don't think Cam is ever one of those dudes that, like, you're going to watch him play in the preseason and be like, oh my God, he looks so good. But he was efficient and he was consistent. And he's going to be more of that playmaker And I think we saw that at Miami last year, you know, like turn the lights on and give him a live rush and he's going to go make some things happen. So we got a very small sample size from Cam Ward, but I think it was a good one.
5 of 8 for 67 yards in his debut. You know what it interested me, Matt, about Cam Ward is like there was no looking to run at all. It was like balls coming out. It was very pocket passer-ish, which I was intrigued by. How much of his game, I know it's not Jaden Daniels, Lamar Jackson-esque, but I mean, would you like Shador is a pocket passer, right? I watch him and I go, oh, that's crazy. He showed some mobility there. That guy wants to stand there center block footed and make throws. Where is Ward on that spectrum?
He's much more mobile than Shador. He's not like he's not Jaden Daniels, but he is definitely he's able to make things happen with his feet. I'm trying to think. I was pausing. I was trying to think of an NFL quarterback that I would compare his mobility to. Pre-draft, I compared him to Jordan Love, but I think he's a little bit crisper as a passer than than Jordan was coming out. So I mean, he's gonna do some things with his legs. What I love about his game is that he has some bulk to him. So he's gonna even be able to like run over some dudes, like short yarder stuff. Especially we didn't see it a lot at Miami, but if you go back to Washington State, where he had to play hero ball a little bit, you definitely see more of his like goal line strength and some of his abilities there.
He ended up last year averaging right around 15, 20 yards rushing or something like that per game. So almost like did it when he had to create or extend. Matt Miller is with us at NFL Draft Scout on social. You should check him out there. In Washington here with the Commanders, you know, we're watching them very closely. So we just watched them play the Patriots. Travion Henderson was unbelievable. Rips off a 100-yard kick return, the first time he ever touches a ball in the NFL. He had a long run that was called back. I think he had like an 18-yarder that held up or something, and he caught a couple balls. I mean, he looked like a guy that should immediately be stealing playing time from Stevenson and Gibson. What did you think of him coming out, and how quickly could he be a real impact player for the Patriots in an offense that needs weapons?
No, I loved him coming out. He was so dynamic. He's such a great receiver. I mean, you saw that in the college football playoffs, right? Like that's who he was. You know, what he did for Ohio State was like the outside running ability, the speed, what he brings to the table as a pass catcher. Like he is tailor made for where the NFL is at right now with, you know, like Jahmyr Gibbs, like that type of back, somebody that can be a slasher, somebody that can be a receiver and the return doesn't hurt. Right. So, but it's funny because like you get the speed, but then he absolutely puts his shoulder into a defender and you know, shows that he's willing to seek contact or that he's willing to run over contact. So I look at Henderson, and that's a team that, like, they're trying to figure out who they are. Obviously, you got Mike Vrabel coming in. Vrabel's got to love what he saw from Henderson and just be like, okay, like, Ramondre Stevenson is a power back. That's what he's going to bring to the table. Gibson is a gadget guy, but Henderson, I think, has a chance to be a little bit of both. So, it wouldn't surprise me if we see it mirror Detroit to some degree of like, hey, David Montgomery's like he's the guy that kind of sets the pace. But we all know Jahmyr Gibbs is the dude. I can see New England being the same way.
What's a reasonable expectation for Travis Hunter this year?
So I honestly hate to pour cold water on it. I think it's to just learn. Like, I don't know that I want him to do anything more this year than just learn how to play in the NFL at multiple positions, because or even just like being great at one position. Honestly, at Colorado, so much of his time was split. He would go to meetings as a defensive back and learn the offense coverages. Who do we have to defend? And then on offense, they would just like hand motion plays into him. So this isn't a dude that was like really, really learning how to be a route runner or, you know, spending time learning about leverage. And he had such a good relationship with Shador that, you know, they had that chemistry already. So coming into the NFL, now he's got to build that, you know, he's got to go build that with Trevor, and he's got to, you know, learn how to be a receiver while also, and I think corner is the second hardest position to go from college to the NFL and have immediate success. He's got to learn how to do that as well. So I don't think statistically, like if I were playing in a fantasy league, Travis Hunter's not super high on my list for this year. You know, long term, maybe. But I don't think we see statistically like a huge, huge jump from him this year.
So speaking of fantasy, a guy that I'm high on this year in this rookie class, and I just want to get your thoughts on maybe what he could be capable of, is Tyler Warren, the tight end for the Colts. They threw him a screen on the second pass of their preseason opener here against Baltimore. I think it came back. But he ended up 3 for 40 in the game. He had a 23-yard catch and run that was ultra-impressive, middle of the field. He like carried a guy to a first down on another catch. I don't know what kind of blocker he is, you'd have to tell me, or what that looks like. But to me, he just looks like a real weapon. How much of a player do you think he'll be right away, or what kind of project is he?
He's not a project. He's ready to go. There's a reason he was drafted so early. It's crazy because at Penn State, they needed him to be God, basically. Like, they needed him to do everything because, you know, that Drew Aller was really developing and they had a new offensive coordinator. They had a really strong run game. So he was a good run blocker as well. But they needed him to be, you know, shoot, on gadget plays, he's snapping the ball and running go routes. Or there's times like he's, you know, lined up in the backfield playing tailback. So he is very much capable of doing a lot of different things. He's a really good athlete. I mean, like, everything about Tyler Warren is why he was really, like, universally talked about as a top 10 player in last year's draft class. And it's when he fell to 14, even, it was a little bit of a surprise. So he, you know, we don't know what their quarterback situation is going to look at, but Warren is someone, and they've got a group of pass catchers there. Like, they've got some dudes there. So if they can figure out the quarterback position, you know, they've got all the weapons you could ever want in terms of, you know, offensive talent and guys that can help your quarterback out.
Matt, I'm a notoriously terrible evaluator. I make snap judgments and then am like stubborn, heels in the ground, and just kind of get myself in trouble all the time in both good and bad directions. But I've fallen in love with Trey Amos, Washington's second round pick. I feel like they might have a dude here. Pour cold water or tell me I'm right. Your choice.
No, you're right. And I loved him. You know, I thought he had, you know, potential as a late first round pick coming out. Just technically speaking, he's so sound. And I remember being on the field at Mobile watching him at the Senior Bowl and just watching him go through drills. And it's like, dude, this is what it's supposed to look like. He's long. He's solidly built. Like, he's not the fastest guy in the world. No, but he's just so polished, and, you know, he had ball skills. You know, there's things that he did at Ole Miss, and he was at Alabama before Ole Miss. Like, you know, there's some pedigree there. Like, Nick Saban recruited you. Okay, yeah, you're probably gonna be pretty good. They probably saw something there. And he was at, you know, Lafayette before that. So there's that chip on his shoulder of like, this dude's worked. But, you know, he's a little bit older of a player. He's been, you know, 5 years in college, so he's experienced. 2 years in the SEC where he had, I think he had 3 picks in his time in the SEC. So, like, yeah, he's just really, really good. And I think especially more so of what they needed, like somebody with a little bit of bulk, a little bit of size, who could play press, who's going to be a tackler in the run game, to where he's not, you know, the liability that, like, you know, Banks drawn out there at 170 pounds was.
ESPN NFL draft analyst and insider Matt Miller. From one guy having a great camp with the Commanders to another, localizing here, Jacory Kroski-Merritt. So if not for his weird lack of availability on a list where he couldn't play and he had one game with Arizona, what round talent would he have been? He has been maybe the biggest story in the preseason for Washington.
Yeah, you know, I thought just his age was like a thing, right? Because he'd been all over. I think he's already 24. He was 24 before the draft. I would have said like round four, probably. It was a deep running back class last year. You know, that's another part of it. It's like, it's a really good running back class. I pulled up my grade on him. I gave him a potential starter grade. And some of that with running back, it's like so scheme specific, because a guy with his size, speed, you know, the one cut quickness, like that works in some schemes, not others. It works really well. And what Cliff Kingsbury wants to do. And this is a funny Cliff Kingsbury story. I remember talking to Mahomes when he came out, just about Cliff and about like strategy and offense and stuff. And he's like, what people don't realize about Cliff is he wants to run the ball, and he's had success everywhere he's ever been running the ball, and his backs are always super productive. And so with Jacory, it's like that one cut talent and how well he cuts in space and how crisp he is as a runner, it fits this offense really, really well. And so, you know, the big key was age. And he, like you said, you know, he only played with eligibility issues. That definitely made things an issue, but, you know, he profiled as a really good running back too, coming out. And so I would think that ceiling could be reached pretty quickly with how impressive he's been.
Yeah, he might be taking work away from Brian Robinson at some point if he keeps climbing the depth chart. Last one for me, Jalen Lane, the wideout from Virginia Tech that they nabbed in the mid-rounds, was drafted in the fourth round. Kingsbury said a couple weeks ago at a practice that he can do things they didn't see on tape at Tech. So maybe you have some insight on what you think he's talking about. But what was your eval on him?
Yeah, another guy that I really liked. I thought round four was even a little bit late. I remember being on the desk when he got drafted, and I was like, man, with this dude's speed, I mean, he ran 4.34. Like, he is a blur, but he's not just a speed guy. Like, he's actually a good route runner as well. So I was surprised that he lasted as long as he was with his versatility. You know, I think he's a slot guy with long speed, but he can make you miss in the open field. I mean, I like him a lot. You're always at that point of the draft. I think you're looking for like what would be on this guy's business card. And, you know, for him, it's 4.34, obviously, but it's what he does. You know, you can run him on jet sweeps. You can run him on screens, hitches. So it's not, sometimes we see speed guys and it's like all they can do is run in a straight line. That's not him. Like he has that shiftiness and the quickness to be an asset on some of that underneath stuff. Now he doesn't have, you know, great size, and you're going to see that, you know, when you stand next to Deebo Samuel, you're like, okay, these are different types of wide receivers playing in the slot. But what he can do, I think vertically separating is what would get him on the field, and some of that underneath quickness and probably even returnability is what I would get excited about.
Matt, awesome with us as always, man. Good to catch up with you in August.
Yep, you bet, guys. Have a great day.
Appreciate you, buddy.
Check out Matt Miller's work, NFL Draft Scout with ESPN, joining us on Grant and Danny. All right, let's hop around the NFL. A couple of the rookie quarterbacks that made their debuts. There was a really toxic discourse leading into the Browns-Panthers game about Shedeur Sanders, where for some reason it became this story that he was being set up to fail. I still don't quite get how a fifth-round pick getting to play a half of preseason football because two guys are hurt and another guy's not going to play was somehow throwing him to the wolves. But lo and behold, Shedeur Sanders not only played, but he played really well. 14 of 23 for a 138, two touchdowns. He made a couple of really nice throws middle of the field with accuracy. He did some things in the pocket that showed some advanced NFL capabilities. I actually thought he looked more athletic and more mobile. I had to go back after the fact and watch his game because it was on during the Commanders. But his preseason performance, to me, it seemed like he has gotten faster, which sounds dumb, or just a little more athletic. Like at Colorado, I am standing in the pocket, and I am not leaving no matter what happens. And that really wasn't how he operated. But look, it's only one preseason game. There's nothing that he can do that will ever be able to lead to a reasonable conversation.
Sure.
On any side. I don't know how we got here, but he's now Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese, and it's just this huge conversation.
Everyone wants to have a declarative statement through whatever
it's
happens, good or bad.
Societal and cultural, and part of the reason maybe why teams honestly wanted nothing to do with
it.
It's just toxic. But he played once. He played really well. Ideally, he can now get more reps with better players around him, and we'll see what it looks like in a week. That's kind of where I am on it.
I did not have, now again, I've never done an interview with him. I've never done any research other than I've just watched him play some football because they were on TV all the time. And I go, that's better than a fifth rounder. So to me, he's better than all these second stringers, third stringers that he's going to be playing with and against. And he probably proved that here in this preseason game.
I was listening to a report out of Browns camp that one of their writers was doing a couple weeks ago. And he said it really well. He said, basically, there is no way you can watch practice and tell me that Shedeur Sanders is not physically way more talented or way more impressive physically than Dylan Gabriel, who they drafted before him in this draft. And I think that's interesting from a couple standpoints. Mm-hmm. Number one, he's ahead of him on the depth chart. Number two, guys like him got drafted and Shedeur Sanders was still sitting there. But his point was that's the physical part of it.
Yeah.
There's all this other crap that comes with taking Shedeur Sanders. And some of it, frankly, most of it is not of his doing. Now, he's gotten in trouble off the field, little minor things driving car that Dylan Gabriel hasn't. There's major questions about, you know, just how he's going to handle himself and what kind of teammate he's going to be and the way he handled the pre-draft process and whatever else. But there's also stuff he can't control. Like, he goes out, throws 20 passes in the preseason, and LeBron James and Jamie Foxx and people are coming out of the woodwork to say, see, he should be starting. You don't get that when Andy Dalton comes in and goes 13 of 15 for 100 yards for the Panthers. There's just something added when you draft a celebrity backup quarterback that teams typically don't like, but he looked like an NFL quarterback in this game,
mm-hmm.
and I am curious to see when a defense is playing more starters and game planning, and when he gets better players around him, can he take another progressive step?
I think it's a very good way to view it. I mean, it reminds me, it's not the same, it's not analogous at all, but when Griffin left here, and we all know the baggage and the story that kind of happened with that, and every then Redskins fan that was still Team Griffin, that everybody was against him, and it was my fault or your fault or whoever else, is sending you, look at the preseason numbers, look at this throw against, you know, the guys that are delivering fridges in 10 days. Look at this, he's still great. Let's all calm down. Oh, now, he can't go start 17 games this past week. He couldn't be a Hall of Famer or a bust or anything else. All he could do, given the sample, is play well. And he did. Give the kid credit.
I would say the exact same thing you just said about Jackson Dart, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Dart was a first-round pick. He looked really good.
Yes, he did.
12 of 19 for a 154 and a touchdown. He also ran three times for 24 yards. He had a 19-yard scramble where he looked like, I'm trying to think of a comp of like a nimble athlete, maybe a Baker Mayfield or a Drake May, or you know, kind of like a smaller Josh Allen.
Like a little quicker, a little more burst than you thought. I mean, honestly, reminded me of Daniel Jones. I know that's a scary comp for people.
I was trying to avoid that one just because it's, you know, everyone will laugh and say,
yeah, forget about the throwing part. Yeah. But like moving around, you go, I wouldn't turn a blind eye. That guy can move.
But like Shedeur Sanders, nobody knew how he was going to play.
Yeah.
He came out there after Russell Wilson started, went 6 of 7 for 28 yards, bunch of checkdowns, and he lit it up. Now, he was playing with backups against backups, and you'll notice that most of the kids that played in these preseason games, you know, there was a lot done, I'm sure, to insulate them, help them out, call some plays that they're comfortable with, all the stuff that you should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even Tyler Shuck went 15 of 22 for a 165 and a score with the Saints. He lit it up. He might start for them, he might not,
yeah.
But I don't think it's a coincidence that all three of them played really, really well. Now it's about taking on better competition, giving them a better opportunity to game plan for themselves. It's not just about playing tougher competition. When you're playing with fours, that's harder than playing with twos.
Absolutely. My sneaky prediction, I don't know how sneaky it is, the Giants are not going to be terrible this year. I think they're going to be frisky and a pain in the butt. Who knows if it's good enough to save Shane and Dable, but Abdul Carter only played 6 snaps, and oh my God, that is a world-eating Galactus Unicron combination.
He's going to be a beast.
He is an absolute star in the making. Add in Jackson Dart, and they might have something.
Ja'Cory Brooks was the leading receiver, catches and yards against the Patriots. He is one of the beneficiaries getting more run at the receiver position with Terry McLaurin not practicing. Caught up with him after the workout today as he tries to fight for a roster spot on the 53.
I think we had a nice scrimmage, you know, both teams. But, you know, as far as the team I was on, the gold team, we still came out with a dub. But, you know, we had a couple of mistakes and that we still need to go and clean up. But as far as a whole, as a team, we feel like we're getting prepared still for the game. So,
coming off of preseason game one, you led the team catches and yards. How did you feel like you played and what were you able to show?
I felt like I played good, but as a team, you know, it's just not just me. But, you know, as a team, we didn't come out with the win that we thought we was going to come out with. And that just showed us, you know, more work we got to put in for the next game. And I really wasn't looking at too much individual, my stats or whatever yards I had. I was just going out there and playing. Whenever they called my name, you know, hope my number make a play.
But in terms of your quest to make the roster at this point, just to fight your way onto the 53. You got off to a fast start at camp. Now you shine in the first preseason game. How do you feel like you're doing in that journey?
I don't know. I just feel, you feel me? I still feel good, but, you know, it's not up to me to judge. It's for other people to judge. So, you know, I'm still got my head down working and continue to grind, you know, trying to stay healthy. Well, still keep staying healthy.
For fans that are still getting familiarized with you, how would you describe your skill set, or what would you say you bring to the party that might be a little bit unique?
A little bit of everything, man. I got big man game, I got small man game, and I feel like I got a little more elusiveness added to my, you know, my yak. So, you know, anywhere they could plug me in type of guy. So that's how I feel. But, you know, I'm just trying to get equipped and fit in wherever they need me so I can plug and play.
When you look at your college experience and then coming out as an undrafted free agent, like in what ways does that add fuel and motivation for you to just prove to everybody that you can hang in this league?
Oh yeah, you know, it's definitely it always leaves a chip on my shoulder. Say, ever since college, you know, I have been going through adversity and, you know, things that wasn't played out right, and I never complained, but, you know, I just keep my head down and keep working. So I just know it's always adversity. It's always something, a chip on your shoulder, you know. And I know where I want to be at in a couple of years. So, you know, I just continue to work. I ain't worried about where they place me at or where I got drafted or even me going undrafted. You know, I was a little disappointed, but that just made me go harder.
It's Corey Brooks with me on Grant and Danny here on The Fan, coming off a big preseason game. With Terry and Noah not practicing right now, there's spots to be had, there's reps to get, there's targets to get. How much has that influenced or maybe even benefited you in a weird way when you look at it that way?
It benefited me a lot because, you know, the coaches had a little trust in me to put me out there and, you know, get a couple of reps. So, you know, I just try to shine when I'm out there and, you know, build on the past days and continue to develop myself as a receiver, but as a player in whole, you know, from the blocking standpoint to the route running and just knowing the defense and knowing my assignment. So I just still feel like I'm getting better. You know, I'm learning every day. I don't say I have it all down pat or whatever. So, and just with those guys being out, you know, they still behind, still got word in my ear. They push me and they let me know right from wrong and how the details going, how everything operate.
In your mind, as someone who studies the game, who's the best receiver in football?
Me.
Right now. Other than you, who's the number one?
I got a lot of guys on my list, for real. You know, even the guys that I'm playing with beside today. So, like, I mean, I could go from retired vets to players that's playing out, even in high school, man.
Like, who's your favorite guy to watch and study?
You know, I had this debate with my homeboy yesterday, so I really don't have a favorite. It's like everybody come out to me, so it's like, man, I like what he do. But if I just say a name, who can I say? I'm gonna say Keenan Allen. Then I'm gonna say Keenan Allen. Yeah.
Just like, is that a comp for you in terms of like body style and play style?
Yeah, body style and play style, but just not just him. It's other guys, like, you feel me? Even Davante Adams, and I could go on and on. Like, I could name guys. I could name Terry McMahon. You feel me? Like, it's a lot of guys that got that oomph in them. So, and I like that. So, as far as being a receiver, I take from everybody.
Ja'Cory Brooks, leader in catches and yards in preseason game one for the Commanders.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station this Wednesday on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.